Tim's News Explosion. 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 Tim's News Explosion.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Tim's News Explosion on this Monday, the 17th of June, 2024. We are live on the Wilmsfront YouTube channel, the Wilmsfront Odyssey channel, and the Wilmsfront Rumble channels. Hello to everyone in the live chat. Let me know if you can hear and see me clearly. It is 9 p.m. here in Melbourne, Victoria, but I will start tonight's show over in the UK, where it is 12 p.m. GMT. It is 17 days until the UK general election on the 4th of July. The Unshackled is co-hosting with 99 Iron Duke an election results live stream, which will air at Australian Eastern Standard Time on July the 5th, because in Australia, we're always half a day or ahead of the Brits. So we will be live as the results are announced. The UK election count is quite different. All of the 650 constituents, they count the votes. There's no live updates. And then they just, each constituent declares the winner by just announcing the votes at those town hall meetings. What is very clear, even this far out, is that the UK Labour Party will form government and Sir Keir Starmer will be the new Prime Minister. But what is unclear is who will be His Majesty's opposition. The dissident right, including myself, hope that it is Reform UK, led by a resurgent Nigel Farage, who is blitzing it on the campaign trail, absolutely full of energy, wit, and also crushing the other political leaders in the debates, leading a national revolt against the British Uni Party. This TikTok of Nigel has been viewed millions of times.
What I intend to lead is a political revolt. Yes, a revolt. A turning of our backs on the political status quo. It doesn't work. Nothing in this country works anymore. The health service doesn't work. The roads don't work. None of our public services are up to scratch. We are in decline. This will only be turned around with boldness.
That's pretty epic, and there's plenty more where that came from. So far, there's been two debates just between Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and Sir Keir Starmer. Then there have been two seven-party debates. So that involves the Conservatives, though Rishi Sunak doesn't attend. He sends Penny Mordaunt, the Lord of the House of Commons, I think is their official title. Sir Keir Starmer sends his deputy, Angela Rayner. And of course, Nigel Farage represents Reform. Then there's Sir Ed Davey, who's the Liberal Democrat leader, who does pretty much all of his press conferences while on Carnival rides. And then there's the leaders of the remaining political parties. I can't remember who their party leaders are, but that is the Green Party, the Scottish National Party, and the Welsh Nationalist Political Party, Plaid Cymru. I've probably mispronounced it, which I'm Welsh on my mother's side, so she'd probably be quite appalled at my Welsh pronunciation there. And obviously not much good has come out of Wales since the devolution of to the Welsh Parliament. It's a one-party state, the Labour Party. But I digress. This is a national election in the UK, so it includes England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. It is first past the post, so whichever candidate gets the most amount of votes, even if it is 30%, is declared the winner. That's why they all count the votes in one go and then declare the winner, because they don't have any preferences to count. Now, in the latest YouGov poll, and this is the first poll, which now has Reform ahead of the UK Conservative Party. It's, if you look at the poll here, Labour is still miles ahead in the polls. Think of a Premier League analogy. The red team is they're 20 points ahead, with three matches to go. They are going to win, and so it is now who is going to come second, third, and fourth. So you have the blue team, which has been in second for just, and now being eclipsed by the sky blue team. But now also the yellow team, that is also surging in the polls. So Sir Ed Davies, it seems that all of his press conferences on carnival rides seems to have played off. And last Friday, at his press conference, not at the Reform Party press conference, where it's always Richard Tice, who was the Reform Party leader until Farage came back and declared that he was coming back as leader and standing in Clacton. Hello, Senator Slayer. Hello, none your business. Well, I think that Richard Tice knows that he has the charisma of watching paint dry. So I swear that he's there just to introduce Nigel to just show a comparison that, I'm here just to sort of, while you're all getting your seats and that, and then here's Nigel. So Nigel, he has declared that now, because the Conservative strategy is that a vote for Reform is a wasted vote and will help Keir Starmer and Labour get in, but they're already getting in. That's why the Reform strategy is to say Labour have already won. And so you'll most well vote for a proper Conservative, patriotic party. And so there's a press conference occurring in just under an hour by Richard Tice and Nigel Farage, where they're announced they're not calling it their manifesto, a contract with the British people. There is already this, what has been announced so far. So zero income tax for the first £20,000, which is, put that to Australian dollars, it's about 40,000. Scrap value added tax, which is like GST on energy bills, lower fuel duty, reduce corporation tax to 20%, abolish business rates for small and medium businesses, freeze non-essential immigration, immediate deportation of foreign criminals, offshore processing, take migrants back to France, fast track new housing on brownfield sites, prioritize social housing for British people, because of course the illegals, they're given 4-star, 5-star hotels while there's British veterans, homeless, life skill classes at school, scrap interest on student loans, increase farming budget to $3 billion, increase UK food production to 70%, subsidise agricultural apprenticeship, accelerate transport infrastructure in the north, which Rishi Sunak cancelled, retain National Health Service workforce, doctors and nurses who work in NHS for 10 years will have student fees written off, hire 40,000 frontline police officers, increase defence spending to 2.5%, increase basic pay for armed forces, leave the European Court of Human Rights, introduce British Bill of Rights. Well, that should be a Bill of Rights for the Indigenous Brits. Scrap net zero, fast track North Sea oil and gas licenses, motivate 2 million people back to work. Job seekers must find work within 4 months otherwise, or benefits will be withdrawn. The only thing I will be critical of the reform manifesto contract is that they are not promising drastic cuts because the UK, it still is a welfare state, and you still can't question the cult of the National Health Service. You can't say that we're just going to completely dismantle it, start again, because it's just a wasted, bloated bureaucracy. We've got Tom Bolo on over on Rumble. Hello, says live chat loud and clear. A behind a bit. We've also got Dawn Browning joining us as well, another British expat. So, because the reform insurgency has been so fast, the long-time deranged critics of Nigel Farage, they have just gone to triggering level 10. So they're at their high triggering alert, which also means more danger for Nigel Farage out on the campaign trail. And another leftist thug assaulted him, this time with wet cement that was thrown at him from a building site when he was touring Barnsley in South Yorkshire on the reform battle bus. That's how you know leftism is a mental illness. Leftists are deranged. The fact that this man thinks it's okay to, well, we assume that he's a man, okay to assault a politician campaigning he doesn't like with wet cement, which is an escalation from a milkshake. And I noticed that none of the people who defended the OnlyFans milkshake thrower, such as Owen Jones, have endorsed wet cement. And I know that all of the other politicians, when Nigel Farage was assaulted with the milkshake, said that this was disgraceful, no place for that. Well, because they know that if this is not nipped in the bud, well, it's gone from milkshakes 1 week, which is basically just designed to not harm the person they're throwing it at, but just to humiliate them. But this is the issue, that if a person gets away with throwing a milkshake on a politician, which is still a form of assault, even pouring water on a person is a form of assault. Just a bottle of room temperature water is assault. If it's not nipped in the bud, there is not an appropriate both legal penalty and also societal-wide condemnation, then there's this escalation here. And when Nigel Farage was first assaulted by a milkshake back in 2019, when he was campaigning in the last UK European elections, Joe Brand, who's a comedian I'd never heard of in Britain, and I watch a lot of British comedy, joked on BBC Radio about Nigel Farage being assaulted with battery acid.
Certain unpleasant characters are being thrown to the fore, and they're very, very easy to hate. And I'm kind of thinking, why bother with a milkshake when you could get some battery acid? That's just me, and it's all right. I'm not going to do it. It's purely a fantasy. But I think milkshakes are pathetic. I honestly do.
So the BBC radio audience thought that that was hilarious. And Joe Brand said, oh, I'm not going to do it. It's just a fantasy. Well, you can tell she's got a pretty sick mind if she fantasizes about Nigel Farage's face being melted by battery acid. Those who are watching can see what Joe Brand looks like. It looks like her face has been melted with battery acid. She's a really hideous creature. Both in her physical form and her mental form as well. And now, Nigel Farage, he is ahead in the polls now in where he is in the constituency that he's trying to win, Clacton, on the Essex coast. The Labour candidate, his name is Jovan Oswu Nepal. And he nuked his old Twitter X account before he was announced as the Labour candidate. But the internet is forever. And he replied to this brown woman on Twitter called Malaya, going into 2020, I'm going to continue being vocal about how to tackle racism and the fact I drink white man tears on a regular basis. And he said it was his favorite drink. And now, obviously, this anti-white racism has been taught to him growing up. And how can you... It's a 96% white electorate, Clacton. And so you're asking for the vote of people who you said you want to drink their tears off. So he's not going to win, but he there is a lot of leftists who are promoting his campaign because, well, they believe that a vote for any other candidate will stop Nigel Farage. He also also said that he was part of the Wakanda Dysphoria, which of course is that fictional African country in Black Panther, which if you've seen both of the movies like I have, you will know that that's an anti-white racist movie. And Wakanda, they keep all of their technology secret so the white colonizers don't steal it from them. And now he looks like the actress who plays the Black Juliet, and he also dresses like the woke black gay Doctor Who as well. So yes, that's you can tell Labour Party putting him in Clacton, that's the type they're pandering to in the rest of the country. We saw Keir Starmer sit down with the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, asking him about what Eid Mubarak means to him. That it's one of the Muslim holidays. And back in Australia, Anthony Albanese and Peter Dutton wished Muslims a fantastic Eid. We know that in the Labour Party manifesto that they have released, that they're going to introduce the race into the Equality Act. So they're going to introduce more a racial affirmative action, and they're also going to make it easier for trans people to switch genders. But the Conservative Party manifesto, that is awful as well. Just look at this extract here. So it says, our United Kingdom is a multi-ethnic, multi-racial, multi-faith success story. Our inclusive Britain plan advocates opportunity while tackling unfair ethnic disparities across education, employment, health, and the justice system. We are seeing some of the most entrenched disparities in our society narrowing, for example, in our justice system and our police forces. We have now the highest proportion of ethnic minority officers, judges, and magistrates since records began. Well, how's the affirmative action, the diversity, equity, and inclusion going in the UK police force? I mean, there have been several diversity hires charged with serious sexual and offences. And of course, the diversity, equity, and inclusion in the Conservative government itself has led to its destruction. I mean, DEI is leading to the Conservatives to DIE, die. I mean, their front bench is, it's so many brown people now, led by the Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. Then there's the Home Secretary James Cleverly, the Home Secretary before him, Suella Braverman, before her, Priti Patel. Then of course there was the various chancellors who were non-white: Rishi Sunak, Sajid Javid, Naheem Zahawi, and also Kwasi Kwarteng. Affirmative, well, it's whatever you want to call it. I don't know if it is affirmative action, but yes, diversity hasn't made the Conservative Party stronger. In fact, it is on the path to zero seats, which began as basically just a meme of the dissident right. But I think we can now dare to dream, because the Reform Party is now ahead in at least one poll. We could be reaching an inflection point under the first-past-the-post system. If Reform continue to surge, then they can win not just a handful of constituency, but they can win, say, 50 plus. And if the Conservative vote continues to plummet, which it definitely can, then the dream of zero seats for the Conservative Party could be realised. And election night in the UK could look something like this.
So we better get started. First, with our exit poll, which even now I can't reveal until Big Ben strikes 10. Remember, this is an exit poll, very carefully calculated, not necessarily on the nail. But here it is, 10 o'clock. And we are saying that the Conservative Party have won zero seats. Rishi Sunak has led the most successful and tenacious political party in history into oblivion.
We have just received word that David Cameron has entered such a deep state of shock that he has not brought up gay marriage in 5 whole minutes.
Now, the reason why Rishi Sunak in that deep fake is looking at a photo of Peter Hitchens hanging on the wall is because Peter Hitchens was the original advocate a decade ago for zero seats. But being a typical Hitchens contrarian, he is now advocating for a vote for the Conservatives so that Labor's going to get a majority, but so they don't get a super majority. I mean, I much preferred his late brother, Christopher Hitchens' writings and commentary much more than Peter's. But pretty much all of the dissident right, and more of the, you would say, the mainstream right, is backing Farage and Reform. Even those who've had their differences with Nigel Farage, such as Tommy Robinson and Katie Hopkins. Katie Hopkins still calls Nigel Farage a monster for blowing up UKIP. Though the Reform, I went through the Reform manifesto before. That is 10 times better than anything the Uni Party has to offer. And I just had a snippet, I read you a snippet of the Conservative Party's manifesto, Diversity, Multiculturalism is a Strength. Here's another excellent deep fake. This is, what the Conservative manifesto is really saying.
For 200 years, the Conservative and Unionist Party of the United Kingdom has bravely and consistently betrayed not only its own voter base, but all native peoples of the British Isles. From constitutional reforms to dissolving the British Empire, from desecration of tradition to importing endless migrants, it is the Conservative Party that has been on the forefront of the destruction of this ancient people and their lands. I am immensely proud of what we have managed to achieve as a party, taking the greatest empire to ever span the face of the earth to being a pathetic, miserable, and broken nation mocked the world over. In recent years, we have greatly accelerated our plans to crush the ethnic Britons, making sure we openly show our hatred to you at every turn. And let me be clear, we do hate you. We despise you. We have not done enough, though. Despite all of our betrayal, our blatant loathing of you, you still vote for us. Even as we refuse to simply deliver a referendum, and then when we do, we subvert your wishes by then opening our borders to the world, even as we take all of your wealth and make the promised public services completely unusable, there are still some of you who vote for us. It is you, our voters, who we find the most disgusting. To combat this, I am incredibly proud to introduce our new policy, Zero Seats. Zero Seats is the policy where we shall do everything possible to make sure at the next general election, we as a party obtain zero seats. You will have already seen zero seats in action, such as arguing over how much of your money to send to foreign conflicts that are nothing to do with you, or straight up making you homeless as we lavishly treat foreign peoples and hand over your property to them, and then criminally punishing you if you so much as point any of this out. So please, when you think about the next election, think zero seats. If we all play our part, we can finally make zero seats a reality.
Zero seats, it's gone from a meme to a political movement. It's a meme movement. And of course, any mass political movement deserves its own theme song. And also, this is another bit of AI which has been done. So this is the Zero Seats theme song.
So you voted for Nigel, you voted for Ford. You've had enough and now you want to see them perform. And tell me how you thought about this concept before. The Tories get zero seats. So do me a favour, when comes the day, and your ballot box is battered off, it's taken away. And you put a vote for Labour in the box and you pray. And the Tories get zero seats. Zero seats, zero seats. You've got a good job, take the vote for Labour, you see.
Now, forget the English fans at the Euro in Germany singing 10 German bombers. They should be belting out the Zero Seats anthem there. And then make sure that, they're drinking lots and lots of... They served light beer at the England versus Serbia game, which England held on. Rishi, he took a photo of himself watching the game. He trying to claim that he's a football fan now, even though he asked a bunch of because he doesn't do Rishi Sunak. He doesn't do any on the ground campaigning. One of his disasters was asking a bunch of Welsh voters if they're looking forward to the Euros. Wales isn't in it because when it comes to football, England, Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland all compete as separate nations. So, Zero Seats, it is gaining momentum. And of course, I will continue to share some of the glorious Zero Seats propaganda, deepfakes AI, because I believe that AI is a net good to our political discourse because it is being used for its appropriate purpose, which is satire. And at his press conferences, Nigel Farage has mentioned Zero Seats because there was a poll that was published in the UK Daily Telegraph, which said that 25% of Brits who voted for the Conservatives in 2019 now want them to win zero seats. So Nigel Farage, at the final leaders' debate, he has demanded, it's being hosted by the BBC, that he go head-to-head with Keir Starmer, that he's not going to happen. So Keir Starmer is not going to agree to that. That's why he sent his deputy, Angela Rayner, to the seven-way debate to face Nigel Farage. And, of course, in the debates, he wipes the floor with all of them. Farage, you can't barrage the Farage. That is the title of tonight's show. And he had the ITV debate audience in stitches when he was asking Penny Mordaunt about the Conservatives at every election betraying their manifesto to cut immigration.
Nigel Farage.
My question is to Penny Mordaunt. given that your 2010 manifesto, your 2015 manifesto, your 2017 manifesto said you'd reduce net migration to tens of thousands, your 2019 manifesto said immigration would massively reduce, and that net 4.3 million people have come into the country since that time, why on earth should anybody believe the fifth manifesto that promises cuts to net migration?
Because of the record of this Prime Minister. So we've had...
We've had
figures out
today.
Yes, so cutting immigration in half, it means cutting it from 750,000 to 375,000. So if they're promising to conservative promising to cut immigration now, it's cutting it from the record high that they have overseen. Campaigning for conservative candidates is the foreign minister and former conservative prime minister, Lord Cameron, and he has decided to go after Nigel Farage, saying he's currently trying to destroy the Conservative Party by standing for reform. Well, you figured that out all by yourself, David Cameron. Wow, that is such a sharp political statement. So this was in an interview in The Times, which is owned by News Corp. And he goes on to say, I want to be sure we can get no reform members of parliament and the Conservative Party can move forward. So he still has a dream of zero seats for the Reform Party and that the Conservative Party it'll just be like a defeat that they suffered in 1997 to Tony Blair, and then a few elections later they'll be back in. This is going to be more like Canada 1993 election, where the Canadian Progressive Conservative Party, which sounds like an oxymoron, a party called the Progressive Conservative Party under Prime Minister Kim Campbell, was reduced to two seats. That is two seats too many for the Conservatives in this election. Of course, the Progressive Conservative no longer exist in Canada. They were reborn as the Conservative Party. Nigel Farage has said that he wants to lead a new movement on the right. Though I think he realizes that to those that are supporting him, a party called the Reformed Conservative Party is not going to be satisfactory. The Conservative Party must be utterly destroyed. And David Cameron, of course, he started the destruction of the Conservative brand by basically just being a Tony Blair in blue colours. He called Nigel Farage's language on immigration inflammatory, and he said, "Well, immigration is an important issue." David Cameron said he doesn't want the conservatives to have the incredibly divisive approach Farage brings to the topic. But although David Cameron started the destruction of the Conservative Party and is also helping finishing the job, that's nothing compared to Rishi Sunak himself. So that ITV interview that he left D-Day commemorations for early, so he sat down with Paul Brand, who was the ITV political reporter who broke Partygate. Well, Rishi Sunak probably likes him because he helped bring down Boris Johnson. Well, Rishi Sunak, of course, made sure to capitalize on the fallout from Partygate by stabbing Boris Johnson in the back with the help of his mate Sajid Javid, and then backstabbed Liz Truss when lost the vote of the Conservative members. Now, the cameras were rolling as soon as Rishi Sunak arrived, And this is what he said about, coming straight from Normandy.
Prime Minister.
Gosh, hello.
Good to see you.
Very nice to see you. Hey, sorry to have
well,
kept
thanks you.
You.
No, not at all. I know you've been in Normandy.
Yeah, it all just ran over. There was, it of course. Was incredible, but it just ran over everything.
I'm sure it was a...
So apologies for keeping you.
No, not at all. I'm sure it was a powerful trip. I mean, so pertinent as well this year, you know, considering what's happened in Ukraine.
Yeah, which I haven't seen, you know, President Biden's remarks, but that's kind of the echo, I think, what
yeah.
he said.
Did you get to meet any of the veterans, or were you...
Oh, no,
did
no,
you
gosh,
just
lots.
Have to do the ceremonial...
Oh, lots. Over yesterday and today. Yeah. Yeah, I've already spoke to almost everyone that was there, I hope.
Oh, just ran over, you know, these war commemoration events. They just drag on and on and on. And this is, of course, before he knew that there was a backlash to him abandoning the D-Day commemorations. Remember, his first policy was to bring back national service for the youth, and he couldn't even serve the nation to remember those who died at the D-Day operation in Normandy in 1944. Now, because Rishi Sunak is richer than the king himself, obviously that is combined income, because his wife is married to an Indian heiress, and his parents were able to afford to send him to a private school. They call private school a public school in the UK. And so he was asked by Paul Brand about how he can possibly relate to the ordinary Brit who is getting poorer, that having to put things back on the supermarket shelves now, that a lot of people having to choose between heating and eating. The lockdowns were absolutely devastating to the working class of Britain. And this is what Rishi Sunak came up with.
When you are wealthier than the king, what do you do day to day to make sure you're still in touch with the kind of struggles ordinary people face? Have you ever gone without something?
Yeah, I mean, my family emigrated here with very little, and that's how I was raised. I was raised with the values of hard work.
What did you go without as a child?
We went out with lots of things, right? Because my parents wanted to put everything into our education, and that was a priority.
So what sort of things had to be sacrified?
Lots of things, right?
Can you give me an example?
All
of
sorts of things. So, like lots of people, there'll be all sorts of things that I would have wanted as a kid that I couldn't have, right? Famously, Sky TV. Okay. So that was something that we never had growing up, actually. But it was lots of things. But again, that's my experience is obviously going to be what my experience was. What is more important are my values and how I was raised. And I was raised in a household where hard work was really important. You had to work very hard, and family was important. Service to your community was important.
I can relate, Rishi Sunak, to your childhood. I grew up without Foxtel. I had to settle for watching the footy on tape delay on free-to-air TV, or just listening to the live radio with no pictures there. Incredibly difficult childhood there. Now, Rishi Sunak's father was a pharmacist, which is certainly, they earn a good coin, and somebody has taken a photo of his dad's pharmacy, and it looks like there's some sort of dish there on the top of it. There is that a Sky dish, or somebody said it might have just been a FreeSat a satellite there. But there's been people who've launched a GoFundMe for Rishi's Sky subscription. Make sure that this childhood without is rectified. Though Sir Keir Starmer, he also talks about his tough working class upbringing up in Surrey. And, well, I'm not sure if any of you are aware of what Keir Starmer's dad did for a living, because he only mentions it almost every single at every single event or debate. And so when he mentioned it at the Sky News leaders debate, he was also laughed at.
But, you know, and I accept I earn a lot of money in the job I am now in, but when I grew up, my dad was a toolmaker. He worked in a factory. It's true. My mum was a nurse, and actually we couldn't make ends meet, which actually isn't a laughing matter. We couldn't make ends meet. We couldn't pay our bills. I know what it feels like to feel anxious about the next bill, which you can't pay.
It's no laughing matter. It was actually Father's Day in the UK this past Sunday, and he posted a photo of his late father, because Keir Starmer, he's in his early 60s. Both his parents have passed on. And so he posted a photo of his dad, and all the replies were, "Oh, what did your dad do for a living again?" Dawn Browning says, is Starmer related to Alba? Yes, it does remind us Australians of Anthony Albanese constantly stating that he was raised by a single mother in public housing. I mean, Brits, just wait until Keir Starmer is Prime Minister. He'll keep saying it. Although when Keir Starmer and Anthony Albanese meet at an international summit, they'll be able to tell another person for the first time, "Did you know my dad was a toolmaker? Wow, how interesting. Did you know I was raised by a single mother in public housing? Wow, how interesting." They'll be able to tell somebody new. But the audience laughing at, "Oh, here's Keir Starmer again saying his dad was a toolmaker." When he was interviewed by a GB News political reporter, he said that the laughter, it evoked some childhood trauma that he and his dad endured.
Looking at last night's debate with Sky News, the crowd laughed when he said, "Your dad's a toolmaker." Why is that? Do you think people, you've got nothing more to say? Are they getting tired of this, the same comment?
Let me directly address you on that. My dad worked in a factory all his life. Mm. He felt people disrespected him.
That's not happening with the laughing.
I do want to see this through, because it actually hit a nerve last night.
Yeah.
Because he felt that in the usual conversation, when someone says, "What do you do for a living?" when socially, he would say, "I work in a factory." And there'd be a pause where nobody quite knew what to say. And he felt really disrespected. It caused him in his life to withdraw from social engagements. He didn't do it much later in life, because it was raw to him that he should be disrespected because he worked in a factory. So when someone laughed last night, my dad would have turned in his grave.
Is that a bit of snobbishness towards your dad?
I don't know what caused someone to laugh.
No.
But if you're laughing at someone because they work in a factory, and that is the one thing that I think had a massive impact on someone like my dad, the disrespect. And it's in me. You can see I'm angry about it.
You are
angry. Frustrated. Mm. Because I will never allow that sort of disrespect for working people to be any part of my plans, any part of the Britain that I want as the future. So I will proudly tell anybody who will listen that my dad worked in a factory. He was a toolmaker, a very good toolmaker. He loved his trade. My mum was a nurse, and she loved being a nurse. And we didn't have a lot of money. And I'm proud of what my parents did. And yes, I don't like it when people laugh at my dad because he worked in a factory.
Quite right.
And now what Keir Starmer, the detail that he leaves out is that his dad ran the toolmaking factory, oversaw 300 employees. Though I would say, and I'm sure the audience would agree, that toolmaking, it's a noble profession compared to, a lawyer, which his son is, and an investment banker, which of course Rishi Sunak will be when he goes back to California after he loses the election, even though he says that he's going to stay. Certainly, tool makers and those that use the tools that toolmakers made contribute a lot more to our nations than a lot of the a lot of the parasitic lawyers and investment bankers that pervade the world now. Dawn Browning says, for fuck's sake, that could have been made into a positive. El Apsi says England is stuffed now. Well, obviously, Sakir Starmer and Labour, they will be a bad government. And so Britain, for some reason, has five-year terms, which is too long. I think ours at the federal level are too short in 3 years. I think 4 years is like what the US has. Is pretty much on the mark there. So there is going to be the battle for the opposition for the next 5 years. What is going to be in 2029? What is the right side of politics going to propose? Obviously, the Conservatives over the past 14 years, they have destroyed Britain, so that's why they deserve to be turfed out. Things are much worse in Britain than they were 14 years ago. So there is definitely, there is obviously, things are going to get worse in the UK before they get better, but it is exciting to see that there is going to be a reform on the right. And this is the ad that the Reform Party has put on Channel 4, the other public broadcaster, for 5 minutes. It just says, Britain is broken, Britain needs reform. It's just that for 5 minutes, nothing else. So I don't know if there's some sort of subliminal message in there that they've put in there to that's going to make people vote reform on election day. Nobody's ever seen that sort of ad before, just 5 minutes of that. But yes, certainly this election, the UK election campaign, was looking extremely disheartening, but there actually is a contest, albeit for second place. Now, we also saw, sticking on UK news, we had the return of Kate Middleton, who has not been seen properly this year. So she was with Prince William, her husband, at it was called the Coloured Flags. What is it? I'll make sure that I get this right. It was at Trooping the Colours. That's what it's called there. So I know that David Clues of Unity News Network has put out the conspiracy theory that William murdered Kate in a rage, and they're trying to disappear her. And so the conspiracy theory still continue that it's a double, that it was somebody wearing a facial prosthetic, and they look very distant. William and Kate, they weren't looking at each other. Now, we also, Rishi Sunak, he left the D-Day commemorations early, but he stuck around for all of the G7 meeting in Italy, his final G7 meeting there, hosted by Italy's Giorgia Meloni. Now, I haven't got the video, but did you see Rishi Sunak giving Giorgia Meloni an Italian greeting, kissing her on the cheek. But when he went, tried to go back for a second kiss, she pulled away, probably thinking, ugh, curry breath. So again, at the G7, Rishi Sunak almost again took the show away from Biden for being the most embarrassing world leader there. Now, Giorgia Meloni, despite the fact that she betrayed her manifesto when she was running for Prime Minister of Italy, her party did quite well at the recent European elections. Emmanuel Macron called a snap parliamentary election in response to his party's poor showing at the European elections, and also Olaf Scholz, his Social Democratic Party, is extremely unpopular. Justin Trudeau, like Olaf Scholz, will be voted out next year at their party's federal elections, and of course Joe Biden is way behind in the polls compared to Donald Trump. Now it's called the G7. It used to be the G8, but they kicked out Russia when it annexed Crimea in response to the Euromaidan revolution in Ukraine, where the pro-Russia elected president was overthrown. And since then, Ukraine has had EU pro-Western puppet president. The latest is Vladimir Zelensky. And so they have committed at the G7 to supporting Ukraine for as long as it takes. And so they are going to be giving a loan roughly $75 billion to Ukraine by the end of the year. And the way that this loan is going to be repaid, it's using the interest from assets they froze from Russia, or should we say stole. So they're going to be funding the war, Ukraine's war against Russia, because they are shooting NATO weapons now into Russia, the Ukrainian military. So the missiles that are going into Russia are funded by them through money that has been stolen from them. So you can see how perverse this is. Now, Giorgia Meloni, she is, even though she's a nationalist, she is 100% behind Ukraine. Now, Vladimir Putin has proposed a ceasefire settlement that Russia is able to absorb, the disputed territories, and that Ukraine doesn't join NATO. That they've met, the Western leaders, they've managed to convince Vladimir Zelensky that he's the next Churchill. And so, like Churchill, never surrender, never find peace, defeat the evil dictator and vanquish them. That's what they've convinced himself of. There's on Netflix, there's another Hitler and the Nazis documentary called Evil on Trial, about the Nuremberg trials. All series now which are about the Hitler and or the Nazis, they've got to have evil in the title, just to make just so they're clear that Hitler and the Nazis, they're evil. So just in case anyone criticizes the documentary for having any sort of, well, being objective about how Hitler rose to power, why he rose to power, and some of the other things that happened in other nations' atrocities, invasions, like the Soviet Union invading Poland. It's important to tell the entire story. But I noticed I'm digressing here. The Evil on Trial documentary. There's a lot of clear Trump comparisons. And they've got all of these professors from the US, including a couple of black ones, which I've never seen them before. I never known them as Nazi World War II experts. And there was one of them her name's Anne Berg. She said that Hitler's summer home in the Bavarian Alps was like his Mar-a-Lago. I mean, how more obvious could you can be that you're comparing Hitler with Trump? So Dawn Browning says, don't they want it to be the G1? The World Economic Forum, that's pretty much the G1. Of course, Tony Blair, the money's on him to be the successor to Klaus Schwab. Uzi says, Starmer says he'll bring in blasphemy laws. Well, he's also... Add that to the pile of anti-free speech laws. Dawn says Churchill was a proper traitor. Dawn has said, have you been watching Europa the Last Battle? I decided to start it a while back, but I didn't think it was very good or objective. I have watched The Greatest Story Never Told. That is incredibly biased propaganda. It's important to watch all of these things so you can, well, it's important to watch different historical documentaries from different sides, so well you can see when you watch a documentary, it doesn't mean that has a certain bias, doesn't mean that you're automatically convinced by it, but it's important to make sure that, because I don't believe in censoring people at all, that you do watch a historical documentaries from all perspectives so that you can have the greatest knowledge, work out what is true and what is propaganda. And so Linda Hunter has joined us. Speaking of Hunter Biden, he was found guilty of lying on his gun application that he was an illicit drug user. So now he is a convicted felon. So the president's son is a convicted felon. That's of course what they always say about Donald Trump, convicted felon. Now, the jury in Hunter Biden's case, they had to find him guilty. The proof was completely there. There is, of course, merit about whether what he did should be an offense in the first place. I mean, the Second Amendment, there should not be this invasive questionnaire. I mean... alcohol and guns don't mix, but people who drink can also have a firearm. But the Democrats sell themselves as the party of gun control. They still support the war on drugs. So Joe Biden has supported both the war on drugs and the curtailing of the Second Amendment. So his son... obviously he supports his son, but he supported the laws that have made his son a convicted felon, and he could do jail time. We don't know yet. Of course, on a human level, I do feel sorry for Hunter Biden. I do. I, I don't like it when conservative media publish those photos, leaked photos from, well, when I shouldn't call them leaked photos, but, well, the photos and videos from his laptop, which show him in the nude. I think that's just too far. I mean, he was the screw-up son. He wasn't the golden child. That was Beau Biden, who died of brain cancer. He was the Attorney General of Delaware. Was clearly being groomed to be the next Biden president, but sadly died. You feel sorry for Joe Biden on a human level. The fact that when he was first elected to the Senate, he lost his first wife and daughter when a truck hit them. He didn't know whether his sons, Beau or Hunter, would survive. It's something that you wouldn't wish upon anybody, including a president of the United States you absolutely cannot stand, who's an embarrassment to the nation and the free world. Donald Trump, he was at the latest. They seem to have heaps of conferences. Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA, the People's Convention. Now, Charlie Kirk, as all of you are aware, has gotten more based. That he has become more race realist. He's also he's still a Zionist, but he has called out how the Zionists have funded anti-white causes over the past 10 years, and now that they're seeing it's come back to bite them now with the radical left protesting their influence because they count the Zionist Jews as white people as well. And so he has also, Charlie Kirk, offered to facilitate the Candace Owens, Ben Shapiro debate on the definition of anti-Semitism. And President Trump, of course, took the stage, but so did Alex Jones, who is not just facing a complete liquidation of his assets from the Sandy Hook families, from that $1.5 billion the damages were. They also want to come after his social media accounts as well. How would that be valuable to them? And so Jack Posobiec brought on Alex Jones on stage. And this is sort of quite the moment, because the broader conservative movement now realizes that Alex Jones was right about everything. Obviously, he was wrong about Sandy Hook, but in terms of the elites and their satanic pedophile rings, when Epstein committed suicide, that was the beginning of when pretty much even the mainstream right realized that, yes, Alex Jones was right about blackmail. A elite blackmail pedophile satanic rings.
What do you think they'll do to President Trump between now and Election Day?
You're reading my mind.
What will they do to him?
God literally gave us Donald Trump imperfect as most men or women that God raises up in history. But he is a man of steel. He is a man who has ice water in his veins. He is a man who gets stronger under attack. And so they have already put him through hell with all these show trials and rigged courts, civil and criminal. And they are going to try to assassinate President Trump. Make no mistake about that. They are going to try to pull out all the stops. And so we've got to pray for President Trump many times a day. And we've got to bust our rear ends to get out there in America, because the people are waking up and they're ready to become fully awake, and let them know that the WF and the UN and Bill Gates have said They're bringing new lockdowns, more forced injections. They're cutting off the farms. They're cutting off the energy. And if you think the economy in free fall right now is bad, it is going to be 10 times worse. So this is existential. We are at war with the globalists, and we must now recognize that this is a war. This is just as important as 1776, and in the context of the population of the world, the weapons we have now, it is more important.
And I also saw Alex Jones being interviewed by Glenn Beck on The Blaze, and now they have been adversaries for years. They haven't liked each other yet. Well, Glenn Beck, he was also a never Trumper, but he's been on his own journey since Trump was elected president, and certainly seen the similarities on what they are doing to President Trump with, well, they've got their first conviction for the falsifying business records. They've got, of course, the Jack Smith federal charges. And then, of course, it's the Georgia RICO. And so it's the same thing. And so I think it was quite the coming together of Glenn Beck and Alex Jones. And it is important to put past animosity for, because this is a battle between freedom and tyranny. I talked about Tommy Robinson, Katie Hopkins backing Nigel Farage, despite the history there. Freedom is too important for the bruised egos, petty grudges, things like that. Now, while there may be over in Britain and the United States a lot of hope white pilling, that is not the case here in Australia, where the Unity Party's grip on state and federal governments is so entrenched. Remember that lockdowns and mandates were bipartisan at the federal and state level, and also bipartisan is the e-safety commissioner. So the e-safety commissioner was a creation of the coalition government, and Scott Morrison extended the term of the e-safety commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, for another 5 years, just before he lost the 2022 federal election. And Anthony Albanese has quadrupled the funding of the e-safety commissioner, and she is spending the extra resources on reports such as this, calling all influencers, young men need positive, diverse role models. And so this is the press release, said a small number of harmful voices dominate online conversations about masculinity. New e-research has revealed young men are struggling to understand what manhood means in a rapidly changing world. And so Julia Mangrant says young men are coming of age against a backdrop of complicating, contested public discussions about what day masculinity means, potentially making the process of figuring out who they are and what they stand for more confusing and fraught. As Australia's online safety educator, we wanted to understand how to support young men in online spaces in ways of a meaningful impact and are relevant to them. I wanted to channel these insights into our kids, youth, parent, and educator resources as an important primary prevention measures. Because in an interview with the ABC, she said that the last thing we want is our young men to become incels. And of course, there's the Andrew Tate boogeyman. Whenever I see her on the TV these days, I hear Helen Lovejoy, please think of the children. Of course, that is just a cover for more government tyranny, digital ID, and censorship. Peter Dutton last week announced that if he was elected Prime Minister in the first 100 days of his prime ministership, he would introduce a social media ban for under 16s using facial recognition for age verification. So facial recognition is so flawed that it mistakes Michelle Obama for a man, or maybe it actually is accurate, but he's chosen Peter Dutton, the most invasive, privacy-violating form of age verification, digital ID. Now, of course, the Labour Party, with their federal minister for women, like to claim that they are the pro woman party. They have through their gender quota have gender equality in their cabinet. Though there is they don't like to talk about that. There's a lot of misogyny in the trade union movement. The most high profile example is he's the now outgoing Victorian Tasmanian CFMEU secretary, John Secker, who you remember was picketed by his own members for not opposing Dan Andrews' vaccine mandate. He still supported the re-election of Dan Andrews in 2022. You may think he's a prick, but his big build is going to give us lots more work. The North East Link, which is costing $26 billion, that's what it's blown out to, this tollway, which will link the Eastern Freeway with the Hume Freeway and the airport from the east. That's basically the construction site is a shrine to the CFMEU with all their flags everywhere. And the reason why there have been so many cost blowouts is because John Secker has been able to, to get lots of this big build money to his workers. So there's traffic controllers, lollipop people who are getting $200,000 just for traffic controls, which is good work if you can get it. And he has just backed a 20% pay deal over 4 years for his CFMEU branch. And this also includes the loosening up on rules on working during inclement weather. So this was just at Festival Hall. And he also is threatening to slow down construction work on AFL projects unless the AFL sacks the head of its umpiring, which is Stephen McBurney, who used to work at the Australian Building and Construction Commission. Well, I think Stephen McBurney should be sacked because the AFL umpiring is just getting worse and worse. I think four umpires has actually made it actually worse, the umpiring decisions. They're just getting so bad and so inconsistent. But John Secker should not be able to intimidate and bully an organization because they don't like one of its employees who has nothing to do with the construction industry anymore. Of course, John Secker oversees the CFMEU in Tasmania as well, and in this, you can guarantee the CFMEU workers will be building the new Hobart Stadium and upgrading the Launceston York Park Stadium in ready for the new team. Now, Anthony Albanese, he was asked to condemn John Secker's latest standover tactics. He said that who employs the AFL is a matter for the AFL, and trumpeted that he expelled John Secker after he in 2019 after he pleaded guilty to using a carriage service to call and send abusive text messages to his now separated wife, lawyer Emma Walters. So just to give you an idea of what he sent, the messages he sent to his wife, said that you are a cunt just like the rest of your family. Another said, you are a treacherous Aussie fucking cunt. Now, recently, his separated wife was charged. She was arrested. She wasn't charged for allegedly trying to hire someone to kill John Setka. So police accused her of purchasing sedatives with the intention of using them to kill her ex-husband. Walters, she accused Setka of bashing her head into a table and leaving her with a bruised forehead, accused him of coercive control. Again, this is the Labour Party, which says it's going to stand up for abused women. Linda Hunter says, did they help with the Commonwealth Games failure? Well, they probably would have helped with the construction. The Victorian government has operated for years with the big build, quid pro quo, with the CFMEU. The big build projects have constantly blown out. And now the former Victorian Premier, Dan Andrews, he was today, had a photograph taken with the visiting Chinese Premier Li Qiang. Both he and Prime Minister Anthony Albanese have done plenty of pandering to the Chinese Communist Party, pun intended, because the CCP, the wolf warrior diplomacy, that is all over now. It's now cuddly panda diplomacy because, well, the import bans and tariffs on Australian wine, barley, and lobster, all it did was just contribute to the downturn in economic activity in mainland China. Also, the CCP's lockdowns did that as well. And so now they've basically come crawling back to us. Though, according to, if you heard the Labour government, it'd be like, they make it sound like they are the ones doing the groveling back to the CCP, or we fixed it after Scott Morrison messed it all up. So Chinese Premier Li Qiang, I think that's how you pronounced it, promised Adelaide Zoo two new pandas because the current pandas there, Wang Wang and Fu Nu, they are going to be repatriated back to China because they weren't into each other. They didn't mate, so they're going to find them new partners back in China. And so then, while in Adelaide, the Chinese Premier went to the Penfolds McGill Wine Estate with the Foreign Minister Penny Wong and the Trade Minister Don Farrell, both South Australians. Don Farrell has been wanting to get the wine trade restarted with China. It's in what seems a conflict of interest. Don Farrell owns a winery. Doesn't that seem a conflict of interest? He's representing our interests in trade, but also representing his own interests as well. Now, Don Farrell, he is, his protege is the South Australian Premier, Peter Malinauskas. Now, Peter Malinauskas, he put on the national agenda restricting young people's access to social media. And the reason that the politicians there, well, obviously they want to increase digital surveillance, but they say parents have been asking for this because it's much easier rather than them banding together and restricting their children's own access to social media and smartphones. It's much easier for the big brother, big government to do their parenting for them. So, going back to Peter Malinauskas, his latest policy announcement to put himself again in the national headlines is to completely ban political donations under the threat of 10 years jail, which he is proposing 100% publicly funded election campaigns, which means the taxpayer funds it, although new parties and independents would be allowed to raise $2,700, which is just, in terms of campaigning, just chump change. It can be subject to a high court challenge. Clive Palmer, who of course spent $100 million on United Australia Party adverts in the last federal election, will challenge it in the High Court under Australia's implied freedom of political communication. We don't know whether this will cover, say, think tanks or lobby groups or community groups or even independent media such as The Unshackled, because I certainly have strong opinions when it comes to governments and political parties. Is they going to come after the media as well? Or it looks like you're endorsing that candidate by saying these things as well. This is, where does it end? This is actually going to be restricting speech. But the politicians say, well, this will save us time fundraising and we can serve the community better because, well, they have been doing such a swell job of serving us over the years. Now, what they are also spending taxpayers' money on is on a LGBTQ organisation such as the AIDS Council of New South Wales. Don't you see the contradiction? Even though we're told AIDS is not a homosexual disease, the AIDS Council of New South Wales, it does so much LGBTQ stuff. The head of community health at ACON is, of course, that degenerate trans man Teddy Cook, who got the eSafety Commissioner to take down Billboard Chris's ex-post saying that she should be mentally institutionalized because Teddy Cook, who's a biological woman, is into bondage, bestiality, and BDSM. Well, now, ACON, they are in their latest advert promoting cervical cancer screenings. This is the supposed inclusive language that they are airing.
Yes, less is more. Good news for cervixes. Good news for everyone who has a cervix.
Everybody with a cervix needs to know about the new cervical screening test. Everybody.
HPV is the most common STI in the world. It's passed on through sexual contact of any kind. Vaginal, front hole sex, anal, oral, fingering, fisting, sharing toys, all the fun stuff.
The doctor or nurse will insert the closed speculum gently into your vagina or front hole.
Your doctor or nurse will give you a small swab like this one and tell you how to collect a sample from your vagina or your front hole.
Yes, so Linda and Dawn, get your front holes checked for cervical cancer because you're people with cervixes. And of course, absolutely disgusting as well, that fat woman, well, I think it's a woman, talking about all of the different the ways that HPV, the human papillomavirus, can be sexually transmitted, saying all the fun stuff. Disgusting. Well, the back hole, you can get prostate cancer up there. People with prostates can get cancer through their back holes. I guess that we're going to be calling it there. Now, there has been, continues to be pushback against organizations such as ACON and their attempted erasure at biological sex. The latest, the re-elected Tasmanian Health Minister, Guy Barnett, he has written to the federal government asking for a federal review into public medical services for children experiencing gender dysphoria, in response to the UK CAS review into NHS child gender services. Also, some good news from Hobart is that the Hobart City Council has apologised and paid compensation to Councillor Louise Elliott for refusing her the ability to book a council venue for a women's rights event. So they have been doing their best to marginalise her. She's democratically elected to the council, limiting her work. And up here in Victoria, Latrobe City Councillor suspended Councillor Melissa Ferguson for, this is the ABC, says, not apologising for anti-trans tweets. And this is what one of her tweets, where she said, via workplace training or any other programs, it's big business. So many feed on the radical push, confuse kids into transgender bender funded gravy train, while the rest of the youth prob go without funding in the communities. Imagine the profiteering off that. So yes, even though she's a democratically elected councillor, Melissa Ferguson has been suspended for a period of a month. So there are local government elections in Victoria in October. It's done by mail-in ballot. There was election fraud in, I think it was the city of in one of the inner city electorates, where the VEC invalidated the election of one councillor. We should have, for local council elections, in-person voting like New South Wales and Queensland do. So be aware of who you're electing to local government this October. See what they are going to be planning to spend your rates on, because, of course, lots of them have drag queen story time events at the local library and also fly the rainbow flag on Ida Hobbit Day or whatever other a LGBT day there is. Now, just about towards the end of the show, so I'm sure you will have heard, you're all be fans of Pauline Hanson's satirical Please Explain cartoons, though the latest cartoon has got millions of views on X because it featured a parody of the new Queensland tourism spokesman, Bluey and Robert Irwin, son of Steve Irwin, going around promoting Queensland, but they get carjacked by youth gangs. And Bluey gets assaulted, but There's a wait for the emergency department. Then they try to film on a beach, but they're kicked off because it's a native title land. And obviously, it has been taking the piss out of Anthony Albanese, Peter Dutton, and other politicians. And Robert Irwin and the production team behind Bluey took the Queensland government money from Stephen Chuckles Miles. So they're fair game, but, and it's clearly not Robert Irwin doing his own voice, but apparently according to his lawyers, it's defamatory to be made fun of, even though it's... It's clearly not him voicing himself. It's a parody, satirical, like South Park did with his father. So, yeah, Robert Irwin, he, like his father, tames man-eating saltwater crocodiles, handles venomous snakes. But don't make fun of him. Of course, he is. Currently the new co-host of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and also does some fashion shoots for menswear now. Fancies himself as a model as well. And also in the backlash to the young snowflake Irwin, it has also been dug up that Terry Irwin, Steve's widow, and Bindi and Robert's mother opened up Australia Zoo as a Pfizer vaccination hub for 12 years and over. And, of course, Pfizer, like Moderna and AstraZeneca, have had proven adverse and deadly side effects. Now, which just premiered tonight on Channel 9 was Do You Want to Live Forever, which is co-hosted by ex-Current Affair host Tracy Grimshaw and our former deputy chief medical officer, Dr. Nick Coatsworth, who is now Channel 9's medical expert. Actually filled in for Karl Stefanovic over the summer. Now, earlier this year, he apologized for his role in promoting vaccine mandates. He fronted the federal government's first vaccine ad, saying we're not safe until we're all safe. So he apologized for his role in pushing vaccine mandates. He advocated the big stick approach, like taking away welfare. When promoting the show on 2GB with Ben Fordham, which is owned by Channel 9, he revealed that he's no longer getting any boosters because the science tells him that he shouldn't get any, he doesn't need any more. So the real science is coming out. Well, there's still a lot of people who ignore the real science. They're still wearing their useless masks, and even though they claim that the vaccines don't do much, they just keep taking them and keep taking them. Now, that is the end of Tim's News Explosion for another week. Now, as I said at the beginning of the show, I'll be doing a UK election results live stream on Friday, the 5th of July, as they are announced. There'll also be new reports from Tiger Mountain with Richard Wilsoncroft. I always get a bit tongue-tied at the end of the show. He just released his two-part cultural reviews on woke Doctor Who and woke Disney Star Wars. He's a fan of both Star Wars and Doctor Who and says they fucked them both. basically the, well, I'm more of a Whovian, and as soon as they went for the female doctor, that was it. I mean, doctors should always be a white male, and so at the end of Doctor Who was when Peter Capaldi's doctor died. And Russell T. Davies, who's back as the showrunner now with the black gay Doctor Who, he resurrected it in 2005. So he's resurrected Doctor Who, and now he's going to kill Doctor Who again. Now, if you want to support the work of The Unshackled, because at the moment I only have the resources to just bring you this news explosion, I do want to do more interviews very soon. Please support. You can either take out a subscription on Substack, so theunshackled.substack.com/subscribe, or you can go to theunshackled.net/membership. We have the basic membership on both on Substack and the Unshackled website, $5 per month or annual $50 per year. You can be on Substack a founding member or a platinum member for $500 per year. Or platinum is $50 per month. There's gold, $25 per month, $250 per year, or silver, $10 per month, $100 per year. I can't do this without your support to do all the research, all the technical stuff here as well, because it's not as simple as just me opening my computer and bringing you the show. But thank you all for your viewership, comments, and support. That's why I do Tim's News Explosion and continue to run theunshackled.net. So Substack, of course, is where I post all of the Unshackled productions and give out all the email alerts. And theunshackled.net, it's still the home for the news articles as well that I haven't had time to do any lately. But hopefully that will change. Remember to help with the algorithm, give a thumbs up, like, comment below. Remember to stay warm in this cold Melbourne winter. And I will see you again same time next week. So remember this next Monday, I'll still be on at the regular time, 9 p.m. Melbourne time, the Wilmsfront channels. But the following Monday, July the 1st, I'll be at Tucker Carlson in Melbourne for the Freedom Conference with Clive Palmer. And I'll bring you Tim's News Explosion on the Tuesday. And that is also the final week of the UK general election campaign. So it's all happening very soon. Good night, everybody. Stay warm, stay safe, stay sane, stay optimistic as well. Good night, everybody.
Tim's News Explosion. 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 Tim's News Explosion.